Hello, I'm Aaron Bond. This is number 0686 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0686. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we remember stand-up comic Judy Tenuta, who died recently. We feature a chat that we had with Judy from 2012. Judy often played the accordion. Was there ever a time that it wasn't with her?
Well, as I said, for a while, it was gone because it was left at the Betty Ford Clinic so that Chevy Chase could, you know, enjoy it for a while. And I think Robert Downey Jr. too.
TV producer and writer Nick Santora on how TV writers and novelists pick character names and how they get them cleared.
It's a real pain in the neck. You have clearance on every script you write, on the books that you write, anything. And they'll go through and they'll tell you, the lawyers will go through and they'll say, well, here's the rule. If there's no one named that character's name, then you're fine. If there's a ton of people named that character's name, then you're fine. If it's somewhere in the middle, you gotta change the name, because then we're gonna get sued.
Miles Cameron, author of the fantasy novel Against All Gods. Miles was always a fan of fantasy, thanks in part to the influence of his mother.
One of my earliest memories is my mom reading me The Hobbit at a cottage. I think I was 4 years old, and I have never stopped paying attention to fantasy. She was a classicist. She studied Latin and Greek. I think that contributed to a lot of her love of like Greek mythology and stuff. And she also loved the Indian mythology, by which I mean from India. And all of that was part of my childhood.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0686, was Aaron Bond, the program director at CHSR 97.9 FM in Fredericton, New Brunswick, where you can hear the Stuff File program. It's heard every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Thank you very much, Aaron, for first of all playing the Stuff File program and also doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Now, let's get right to the stuff. Okay, so there are lots of issues in the world today that should be the focus of our attention. The invasion of Ukraine, Middle East peace, the plight of indigenous people, rising crime, rampant racism, climate change, deadly hurricanes, the rise of fascism in the world, the slow death of democracy, and whatever spews out of Kanye West's mouth. But what are some people focusing on right now? Apparently, it's the overly woke latest candy spokesperson, the newly minted purple M&M.
Hey, Purple, 10 minutes till your big debut.
I'm the new M&M's candy. Do I have what it takes? I want to be the best, or even pretty good. Would be great.
Candy manufacturer Mars Incorporated has introduced another big change since it unveiled new looks and personalities for its M&M's characters earlier this year, which stirred a furious response over the beloved mascot's progressive makeovers. According to the company, the new purple peanut spokes candy represents acceptance and inclusivity, but has instead sparked online backlash once again for being too woke and trying to ram the company's message down people's throats. The purple M&M is the brand's first new character in a decade and is supposed to be known for her earnest self-expression. Said the company, keen self-awareness, authenticity, and confidence are the driving forces behind purple's charm and quirky nature. The purple M&M made her official debut on YouTube singing, I'm Just Gonna Be Me, in a 1 minute, 45 second, mind-numbing musical extravaganza.
I'm just gonna be me. I'm just gonna be me. Nothing else I can be but a purpley peanut-shaped chocolate candy.
She's really peanut-shaped.
She wears lace-up combat boots and is described as quirky, confident, and a bit awkward.
I might say the wrong word. You might say I'm awkward. And hey, I would agree.
She's pretty awkward.
But let's leave that line for me.
On that.
The brand also removed the prefixes of Mr. and Ms. from each of the characters' names to make them more genderless and change the orange M&M's personality, giving it a more anxious look to better reflect young people. Okay, this is where I get off this train. You know, from the time I was a child in the early days of television, there have been commercials where food either sang or talked to me. I've never really understood this. The only thing that I ever found creepier than food that seemingly enjoyed being eaten by me was food like M&M's that themselves seemed to be creeped out at the concept of being eaten. So giving the orange M&M's the anxious personality of Barney Fife is almost redundant.
The first rule is obey all rules.
And the idea of M&M's being more inclusive? Purple joins the ranks of the red, yellow, green, brown, orange, and blue M&M's. This one added color to the rainbow of candy-coated chocolate peanuts suddenly makes it inclusive? Well, not to the peanut-allergic, lactose-intolerant crowd, but I digress. And seriously, folks, does candy really need a message to be eaten?
I'm just gonna be me. Because there's really nobody else I wanna be. I'm just gonna be me. I'm ready to say hello to the world.
You just did.
Do you get the feeling that there's a lot of ayahuasca being consumed at these advertising pitch meetings? Yeah. A Kansas library says a VHS tape checked out nearly two decades ago was returned recently. The Johnson County Center Resource Library said the tape, which was the Russian film Burnt by the Sun, was checked out on a seven-day loan in 2003. It's unclear if the borrower would be fined. The maximum fine at the library was $6, said Amy Field, web content developer for the Johnson County Library. In this particular instance with the VHS, we just don't happen to use that format anymore. You just know that the delinquent returner is going to get life if they were not kind and didn't rewind.
Excuse me, where is your VHS section?
Right over there.
That's it? That's the only tapes you have?
One for every person who still has a VCR.
Anyway, let's get to our first segment here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We recently lost another great comedic talent. Judy Tenuta, an unconventional, often brash stand-up, who guested on numerous TV shows and appeared in two Weird Al Yankovic videos, died on October the 6th of ovarian cancer. She was 72. I've had the pleasure of talking to Judy on several occasions, including when I was working with her and with Jess for Laughs, which brought her to Montreal several times. Ironically, we were slated to have a conversation for this very show back in August, but she was under the weather and promised to do it when she got better. Sadly, that never happened. So I'm going to go back a decade to April of 2012, when we first had Judy on the show. At the time, she was promoting her book, Full Frontal to Nudity. And as usual, her accordion always seemed to be nearby. Here's that conversation now. Hi, Judy.
Hi! How are you? Here!
I'm fine, and you?
Oh, I'm good, of course, because I am the goddess!
Yes!
Oh, I'm so excited. Yes, I have a book coming out, Full Frontal for nudity.
Do you ever go anywhere without the accordion? I have to know that.
Well, as I said, for a while, it was gone because it was left at the Betty Ford Clinic so that Chevy Chase could, you know, enjoy it for a while. And I think Robert Downey Jr. too.
Now...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were having fun. Party, 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 party. The world was going, Little, you're getting kind of moody. It's time to listen to me, the goddess beauty. Because I'm the queen of love and the princess of romance. Shake it up, Scooby-Doo, and party in your pants. Party in your pants. Party in your pants. Never has there been such a sassy little dance. You can do it anywhere in any circumstance. Have yourself a big fat party in your pants.
Okay, so you're...
Get everything going.
Everything's going fine. I want to talk about your book, Full Frontal to Nudity, although I'm almost afraid to ask. What will one find between the covers of your book?
Well, it's actually three books in one. I have a section called Judy's Hollywood to English Dictionary. And in it, I explain what certain phrases that are used continually really mean. You know, people say things to one another like, oh, let's be best friends forever. Code for we wave to each other on the red carpet. That's what that means in L.A.
Something tells me that you don't quite fit into L.A. like some other celebrities do. Would that be a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. I'm always on time, and L.A. means, or on this side of the country means, I'll be 40 minutes late.
That must annoy you.
No, but that's how it is. No, you just know that when you're here. I have a three-picture deal means I live in a shopping cart. I'm not kidding you.
I believe you completely.
Yeah. So, you see, I explain it all, and there's pictures. A lot of great pictures to go and some drawings, you know.
Now, are there people in Hollywood who might be upset with you giving away the, you know, insider secrets?
Well, nobody's really ever compiled this. This is just something I thought of because, you know, how people, oh, this is another one of my favorite ones is, you know, oh, my plate is so full. I just can't do that, you know. And meanwhile, you know, they're waiting in line for food stamps. Yeah, right.
Now,
it is so full, I couldn't possibly come with you to that party. Yeah, right.
Now, do you actually, I understand, you actually have also some recipes in your book. Is that true?
Yes, I call it, I call them snacks. Sassy stoner snacks. I was told since I was little that I eat like a stoner, even though I'm not high. Although one would think that maybe by my act I am, you know. But, I have some great snacks here. You would especially appreciate them if you're high. But if you're not high, you would like them anyway.
Can you give us an example of what one of your favorite snacks would be?
Okay, here's one. For the trailer trash man boy, don your Daisy Duke short shorts. Do the two-step while making your love pig eat Spam and eggs off your legs. Just like a younger, hotter Martha Stewart in prison with a sassy cellmate like Rachel Ray. Oh, well, I guess that would make you almost a coherent Jessica Simpson. Now, you should shout out a cheer like a Laker girl. We're having Spam and eggs. It tastes so good under my legs. Spam and eggs are really neat. Spam and eggs are fun to eat. Spam and eggs just can't be beat. Hooray for Spam and eggs. Spam and eggs is a really good snack.
You know what's really scary, Judy?
What? You eat that.
2 days ago, I had Spam and eggs for breakfast.
Okay, you see what I'm saying? Did you have them off of some hot girl's legs? Probably not.
No,
but anyway.
No, I did not.
Idea.
No, I did not. But that certainly is, in more ways than one, food for thought. So you mentioned three sections of the book. We talked about food. We talked about the other part. Now, what's the third part of the book?
The third part of the book is, well, and then I have other little things in there, like the most fun I had in the limo, little personal stories, travels of the goddess. The third section, though, is 40 ways to breed a love slave. For example, these are different things. These are different bits of advice if you want your guy, if you want to get a guy, really. I just say it more colorfully. You know, 40 ways to breed a love slave. So, never sleep with a guy on the first date unless he's Hugh Jackman or Ryan Reynolds. A man has to be teased into pursuing you. No matter how horny you are for him, do not submit to that, or you'll just be a notch on his belt. My friend Trina was always bringing guys over to her place for an after-dinner drink, which turned into a makeout session on her Shea Lounge. Ladies, you must never do the shaying. The pig must chase you.
Those are definitely words to live by.
Yes, I know what I'm talking about.
Now, are you talking, as far as this book is concerned, are you guiding it toward the younger woman, the more mature woman? Who do you see your basic audience as being? And, most importantly, are guys allowed to read it?
Oh, my God, so many guys will want to read it, especially, hello, men who are sort of like women anyway, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay, so since you put that out there, what about straight guys? Can straight guys learn a thing or two from your book?
I would love it if they would read it. They need to know the secret. Yes.
So you're just...
Okay, here's another one. Do not compliment this pig too much, especially if he's hot. Do the Yoko Ono. Act like you're unimpressed, then he'll work to win you over. Men need a quest like Don Quixote fighting windmills and wizards. Wizards like Charlie Sheen.
You know, I've had the chance to see you perform live on several occasions when you've come to Montreal for Just for Laughs. I've actually had you spit gum in my direction.
You've been blessed by the goddess!
Yes, I have. And I can always say without a doubt that watching you on stage or talking to you right now, it is always an unexpected treat.
Oh, thank you so much, Sunsicle. let's see if there's something else that I can, a quick thing that I can read from my book. Should I have it?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Let's see. Here's an actual goddess stuffed shroom. Two slices of white bread, or if you have to be healthy, use fake whole wheat bread, 24 large white mushrooms, and a stick of butter, because butter's better on everything. Anyway, to set the mood, play one of my videos, like Hot Bronco and Spike It, or one of my albums, Buy This Again, Pigs. Then drink a half a glass of white wine or apple juice if you're in AA. Then preheat the oven to 375, cut the stems off the shrooms, cut off dried, icky stems, and dispose. Okay, then I just type, pretend you are mommy dearest and go mental and tear the bread into very small pieces, and then add two sautéed stems.
And no need for any wire hangers?
No need for any wire hangers unless you want to use them to stir.
The book.
You could do that. You could do that.
The book. The book is called Full Frontal to Nudity. People can check out Judy's website at judytenuda.com. Judy, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, thank you. Oh, keep Montreal nice and sassy for me. I'm going to go up there. I like old Montreal.
And old Montreal loves you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I'll see you there. I will definitely be in a love slave drawn carriage.
As usual with Judy, I lost control of that interview the second after I said hello. She was always quite the talented live wire and a marvelous human being. She is gone from us way too soon. Judy Tenuta was 72. Again, if you want to check out her book, it's called Full Frontal to Nudity. And you can go to my website at thestuffwild.com, go to the page for this show, which is show number 0686, and you'll find the links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll find out just how character names get cleared for things like novels, television shows, and movies. Plus, we'll meet author Miles Cameron. His new book is the fantasy called Against All Gods. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way, and much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. An unnamed 32-year-old woman didn't get far in the Mini Cooper she stole in Lakewood, Washington on September the 19th. The driver, who had her 4-year-old son in the back seat and a bottle of whiskey in her hand, steered the car right into a section of wet cement that had just been poured by city crews. When she emerged from the car, she threw a television and an Instant Pot out of the car before trying to walk away. All items were stolen from the suspect's mother's home. After her arrest, crews went back to work on the pavement. I somehow get the feeling that this woman has been a disappointment to her mother for quite some time. And, well, let's be equal opportunity here in the bad parenting department. A Florida man used his infant son as a human shield before being tased and arrested. 27-year-old Brandon Matthew Douglas Lohner of Palm Coast, Florida, was standing in the drive-thru lane at a McDonald's when he was cornered by police officers. Body cam image shows Lohner holding the baby up to his chest while the officer repeatedly instructs him to put the kid down. Lohner could be seen looking frantically in the other direction as sirens from other incoming officers could be heard. The original officer tasered Lohner, who fell on the ground on his back, which saved the baby from being dropped directly on the pavement. Lohner crawled under a car and tried to escape before he was tackled by a police dog. The baby, wearing only a shirt and diaper, can be heard crying "Dada" while reaching out a hand toward him. Lohner was arrested after the child's mother reported her child was abducted by the suspect, who was armed with a handgun, who then drove off with the baby in his lap. The 1-year-old child was not hurt and was quickly reunited with his mother. Lohner is currently awaiting trial without bail. Well, he's not exactly dad of the year material, and you know he's going to get life just for not having a baby car seat. Keith Tyson of Sheffield, England, has maintained a striking topiary he calls Gloria in the front garden since 2000. The bush depicts a woman lying back in a reclining position with her knees bent, but Tyson has a problem with random drunken louts entering his yard, usually during the night, and becoming intimate with the shrub. For one thing, he said, the noise wakes him up. But more disturbing, the act damages Gloria's figure. Someone will squeeze her breasts, he said, so it will damage it. They're climbing on top of her and pulling her legs apart. You know, it's disgusting. Now Tyson is begging his community to leave Gloria alone. One Twitter user suggested he grow a thorny vine through her to deter the assaults. You know how dogs will hump anything, including your leg? Well, it appears that this is the same thing that happens to drunken guys. And by the way, I've placed a picture of Gloria on the Stuff File Facebook fan page, plus on the Stuff File program Twitter account, so try not to get too aroused. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next segment with me, Peter Anthony Holder, well, here's another story that's a sign of the times. Cell phone video from inside the Charlotte Mecklenburg Middle School appears to show a teacher brazenly smoking in front of middle school students. Eighth grader Amani Barner recorded the video at Randolph IB Middle School in Southeast Charlotte, and she says she doesn't want the teacher back in the classroom. Barner said something smelled off in her French classroom. In the video, you can see puffs of smoke near students as they walk by the person Barner identifies as the teacher, and one student can be seen waving away the smoke. Barner showed an administrator the video at school. The school's principal notified parents an investigation into tobacco use on campus was underway, and the employee has been placed on administrative leave with pay. You know, I'm old enough to remember that when you walked past the forbidden door that led to the teacher's lounge in elementary school, every time that door would open, even just a crack, smoke would come billowing out of it as if to signify the election of a new pope.
Now, teacher, I am fully aware of the rules. Everybody knows that smoking ain't allowed in school.
Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Have you ever wondered how both screenwriters and novelists come up with names for the characters they write about? And do names have to be cleared by someone when they create them? Writer and television producer Nick Santora is back on the show. He's the man behind such hit TV shows as CBS's series Scorpion, Fox's Prison Break, A&E's Breakout Kings, Amazon's Reacher, and more. He's also the novelist behind such books as 15 Digits and Slip and Fall, both, by the way, great reads. Nick joins us via Zoom from California. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program once again. So again, right off the bat, how do you, either for a screenplay or a novel, how do you come up with names for characters? And do they have to mean something for your character when you're writing them?
They have to fit the character. Now, when does a name fit a character? I have no idea. It's kind of like that old Supreme Court decision where they go, I don't know what pornography is, but I know it when I see it. It's I don't know when a name fits a character, but I know it when I feel it. So if I feel the name fits, I'll try to use that name. But sometimes it does not clear legal, and then that's a problem.
And that's what I wanted to talk about, because how does a name clear legal? What hurdles do you have to go through?
It's a real pain in the neck. You have clearance on every script you write, on the books that you write, anything. And they'll go through and they'll tell you, the lawyers will go through and they'll say, well, here's the rule. If there's no one named that character's name, then you're fine. If there's a ton of people named that character's name, then you're fine. If it's somewhere in the middle, you got to change the name, because then we're going to get sued. And there was a massive lawsuit years ago on a very famous television show. And everyone is, and I can tell you about a little bit about that if you want, but everyone's been really scared since that happened.
Yes, tell us about that.
I'll give the caveat that I might be wrong about some of the things I'm saying, but my understanding is it was a CBS television show. Writers did what all writers do. They use a placeholder. You need to name a stadium. You need to name a business. You need to name a character. You use a placeholder. And then you go, okay, we'll change that later. And sometimes you do it because we're so busy. We're always under deadline. I mean, the deadlines are insane and you never think you're going to make deadline. So what you do is you go, I'm going to take this placeholder. I'm going to throw it in there and we'll use it for now. And it was about a realtor, is my understanding. And so someone used the placeholder. It would be like if you had a famous basketball player in a script and you go, okay, I'm going to name him Magic Johnson just for now. Well, they'd use the name of a very famous realtor in Los Angeles that advertises all over Los Angeles. And then they forgot to change the name. And this character was like a murderer in the script. And this character, I don't remember the exact storyline, but this character was like, I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but like using open houses to lure in victims and kill them. And they were using the name of a real realtor. And I say that three times fast. And there was a lawsuit and they lost and there was a big payout. And since then, it's gotten real draconian to get a name on the air.
Wow.
When I first started, Peter, I was using the names of buddies of mine, people I went to college with, you know, guys I used to pal around with, whatever, or guys, people you didn't like. You just throw their names in everything. And now you cannot do that, which is why if people are real keen television watchers or movie watchers, characters' names are like either, you know, Tiberius Stinky Pants, like some insane name you've never heard before, or Mike Smith. Because there's either got to be a million of them or none of them.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that the lawyers will check to see if, as you just said, there's one of them that's famous or a million of them, and they have to find something in the middle. How do you go about defining what's in the middle? Because, I mean, there are just millions of people out there with very common names.
Yeah, it. I've gotten clearance reports where they'll say, you know, I'll use your name. Okay, Peter Anthony Holder in Seattle. That's where the character lives. There are no Peter Anthony Holders in Seattle, so you're okay. I've had other clearance reports that say, there's 12 of them on the West Coast. Change the name. Or someone like you who is prominent, who has their own show, who is out there, they might go, you know what? Too well known. Come up with a different name. I've had clearance reports where they'll say, 30 people have this name. You're fine. I've had clearance reports where they go, 6 people have this name. You're fine. It's a legal term of art. It's whatever the lawyers for the studio and the network feel comfortable with. I have pushed back at times when I've said, guys, I love this name. Sometimes they'll say, give the middle initial once. Mention the middle name once, and then you can just call them this name because we have a record that it's not the same person. There's all these little tricks. That's why if you look at shows like a show like Scorpion, I like to pick names that stand out just so when people read my scripts, they can remember who the characters are. Because if you have Mike, John, Nick, Steve, Pete, like let's face it, Pete, you and I have a common name, right? Pete, Nick, a lot of people named Pete and Nick. So I'll name characters Sylvester, Cabe, Happy. Those were names of characters on Scorpion. They're not uncommon, but they're not super common. And that helps just in the reading of your script too.
You said that you push back on some of these situations. Can you give us a percentage of how many battles you won where you got to keep the name? Is it a minority or the majority?
I rarely. Maybe I've won a couple of times. Maybe. you can't fight town hall. You can't fight the lawyers. They'll beat you every time.
As I mentioned, you're a novelist as well. So is it as difficult to get a name past whoever has to clear the names when you're dealing with a novel as opposed to a television or movie project? Because the chances are more people are going to see your television show or movie than might read something that you've written.
You still have to go through clearance. It's not as hard. I remember with my first book, I named a criminal thug, organized crime guy. He was a killer. He was a racist. He was a thief. He was all of these things. I named him after my father-in-law. and I love my father-in-law. I have a great relationship with my father-in-law. He just had a good name. And so I did it. And it's, you know, it's out there. And he, I remember I said to him, I'm like, do you care? He's like, nah, I don't care. He's like, I think he thought it was cool that a character was named after him. I don't think he realized what a bad dude he was, even though I told him, but I don't know how closely he listened to me. But he didn't care. You know, sometimes you just ask permission. And if it's family, you don't really have to, like my father-in-law, I don't have to get it in writing. He's family. If it's someone else, you know, you ask them to put it in writing. Hey, yeah, you can use my name.
You mentioned it's a good name for the character. So when you're writing a character and you come up with a name, does it help you in the writing process of the character? Because you have that name that you feel fits the character so well?
Well, sometimes it can help, like, the theme of the character. In one of my books, I had a character whose last name was Principi. You know, a really beautiful sounding Italian name. And he wanted to make his father proud. That was a big theme of the book. He wanted to make sure that his dad was, just happy with the way he was living his life. He wanted to live up to those expectations. So in the writing of it, even though his name was Principi, I had characters start calling him Prince. Because what's the ultimate I have to live up to my father? A prince to a king. So sometimes names just work out that way in a happy accident. But nicknames, if you have a character who has a name that lends itself to an unflattering nickname, that can affect the character's psyche, their mindset, how they're seen in the neighborhood, things like that. So that, you know, that's always fun. I can give you my trick as to how I find a lot of character names, and it might help if anyone that's listening, you know, they want to write something, it might help them.
Sure.
If I'm by myself, or even if I'm in a writer's room and I'm talking to all the writers, I'll go, well, we need to name a character. And I'll go, quick, someone, pick a city. And someone will go, Pittsburgh. And I'll go, okay. And you, quick, someone, pick a year. And they'll go, 1987. And I'll just pick the 1987 roster of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I'll scan through and I'll look for a cool first name. And then I'll go, someone, pick a city. And then people get what I'm doing. And so they get excited and they're like, you know, Cincinnati. And then someone will go, 1962, and we'll pick a last name, and we'll combine athletes' names from different years, different cities, first names, last names, and that's somehow how you get names. And I pick a lot of athletes' names. I mean, I will steal from athletes, especially some of my favorite teams, like all the time.
Now, I just recently watched one of your films, which was Most Dangerous Game, and you had a lead character named Dodge Tynes. And by the way, this takes place in Detroit, Michigan. So I'm assuming that Dodge has something to do with Detroit.
Yes. His father worked the line, and his father, like a lot of people in Detroit, are car crazy. They love cars, and cars are awesome. And so he named his kid Dodge after the line, you know, the line he worked on, his favorite make of car. And Tynes, his last name was originally Maynard, because that was a punter for the New York Giants. That name didn't clear there, which is crazy. There must be a Dodge Maynard somewhere, and it's such a unique name, they made me change it. So I went with a different New York Giants kicker, this time a place kicker, not a punter, a guy, Lawrence Tynes, and I just used his last name, and we got Dodge Tynes.
You do love your Giants, don't you?
I love sports, man. I really do. I love hockey, football, baseball. I love it all.
Well, it's fascinating to find out how names are created, and more importantly, how they had to be cleared. I'm sure this is a lot of information that a lot of people have not thought about in the past. I thank you once again, Nick, for being on the program with us. But before we let you go, I got to let you plug something. There must be something you're working on that you want to tell us all about.
Well, you mentioned most of the shows that I've done, but I have a show, Reacher, on Amazon right now. Real fun show. And I have a show coming out on Netflix in 2023 called FUBAR. F-U-B-A-R is how it's spelled, FUBAR. And that is starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and is the first time he's ever doing scripted television.
Excellent. And by the way, if you ever want to use my name, I give you the clearance right now.
But what if I make him an organized crime thief, racist, criminal, murdering bad guy?
You can make him the most heinous person on the planet. I allow you to do that, sir.
You got it, Peter.
Nick, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Of course. Thank you. Take care.
Nick Santora. executive producer, showrunner, and screenwriter. As mentioned, his current show is Reacher, which is on Amazon. And while you're on Amazon, you have to check out his film, Most Dangerous Game, which is a thrill ride starring Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz. I also have to mention Nick's books. He has two, which, as I mentioned before, are great reads. One is called Slip and Fall, and the other one, which is one of my favorite reads of all time, and I hope one day it's turned into a film, it's called 15 Digits. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0686, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order both of his books directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many a fine radio station, including CFMH FM 107.3 FM, in St. John, New Brunswick.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Hey, how would you like to become a patron of the Stuff File program? It's easy to do. By going to patreon.com and becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. If you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. Join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Against All Gods. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, and I've got another Stuff File news story to share with you right here, right now. A Florida man was arrested after he allegedly shined a laser at a Sarasota County Sheriff's Office helicopter.
Blinded by the light.
Deputies said 44-year-old Nick Davidson pointed the green laser at the chopper while pilots were responding to a fire. The Sarasota Sheriff's Office said Davidson's actions could not have come at a worse time because the area was under a state of emergency after Hurricane Ian. Deputies were busy assessing damage and guiding ground units around potential hazards, wrote the Sheriff's Office on a social media post. Not only are Davidson's actions dangerous, but they have the potential to flash blind and cause long-term damage to the visual capabilities of our pilots.
Blinded by the light.
Davidson was arrested and booked into the Sarasota jail. He is charged with pointing a laser light at a pilot, which is a felony. So obviously he didn't have a chance to escape, which means he wasn't revved up like a deuce, another runner in the night. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Miles Cameron is the author of the fantasy novel Against All Gods. It's a powerful epic set against an alternate Bronze Age. And Miles joins us via Zoom from Toronto. Hi, Miles.
Hi, Peter, and thank you very much for having me.
First of all, let's talk about the interest you have in this particular period. You have been a fan of fantasy, from what I understand, all of your life.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. One of my earliest memories is my mom reading me The Hobbit at a cottage. I think I was 4 years old. And, I have never stopped paying attention to fantasy.
Is your mom still around?
No, I'm afraid my mom passed away a few years ago. She was a classicist. She studied Latin and Greek. And I think that contributed to a lot of her love of like Greek mythology and stuff. And she also loved the Indian mythology, by which I mean from India. And all of that was part of my childhood.
Did she live long enough to see your success as a writer in this direction, knowing that she probably sowed those seeds when you were just a young child?
Peter, that is a great question. And honest to goodness, before you asked it, I had never really thought of it that way. My dad was a career writer. He wrote all kinds of things, including serious mainstream literary fiction and so on. And I think my mom was very used to the idea of us being writers. She would just have lived to see Red Knight come out. So she might just have sort of caught that. But I know that when I went back to school in the 2000s to do classical Greek, because I was a late learner in that respect, she was very proud of that. She was delighted that I had fallen in love with her world of ancient Greece.
Mm. Now, tell us what Against All Gods is about.
Well, it might look like an allegory of people rising up against a sort of oligarchical surveillance capitalism. And I say that with a smile on my face.
Well, isn't every fantasy novel really an allegory of something?
J.R.R. Tolkien denied that his books were an allegory, and I accept his denial. There is some deliberate political commentary in mine. But at the same time, my interest in the Bronze Age and the way Bronze Age cultures is very deep and pretty old. And I agree with a lot of other fantasy writers who are writing right now that it's time to maybe walk away from the standard Eurocentric medieval or ideas of the European Middle Ages fantasy tropes that are, you know, Tolkien-esque and maybe a little like The Witcher or various other George R. R. Martin products we're familiar with, and to try and touch on some other stuff. And one of the things I love about the Bronze Age is that it's very, very international and inclusive in a really different way. It is not an all European world at all. In fact, Europeans played very little role in our historical Bronze Age.
So the story of Against All Gods deals with primarily?
Deals with a ragtag bag of humans who decide to start a revolt against the gods. Let me just embroider on that. If people in your audience have ever read the Iliad, I think one thing that comes to everybody who reads the Iliad is that this is a terrible world where the gods do whatever they want and the humans mostly just die. And we tend to look for the heroic aspects in Achilles and Hector, but really it's abysmal for slaves, it's abysmal for women. And when you get right down to it, it's not that great for Achilles and Hector either. They seem to have very little agency, very little control of their lives, and the gods do whatever they want. And a long time ago, I think I was in university when somebody said in a class I was in, what would happen if all of these humans have revolted against the gods? Because the gods are terrible. And I thought, oh, that's a good, you know, that's a very interesting idea. And it sort of stuck with me for a long time.
Now, this is a genre that you've been in for quite some time, always been interested in it. But now it seems to be an explosion, thanks to television series and movies. There seems to be an explosion of this type of period writing and storytelling. Do you find that that's a boon for someone like yourself, or does it become more difficult because suddenly everyone's running to the exits as far as, you know, trying to write this kind of stuff is concerned, and there might be a glut in there? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Is there a yin and yang to the proliferation of fantasy?
I believe, as a matter of, I don't know, absolute belief, that every good fantasy author out there helps me sell my books, because I can't write enough to keep any readership satisfied. Of course, they're going to read lots of other books. And this is kind of a golden age. It's a golden age for inclusivity. It's a golden age for new authors. But now I'm going to say a rougher thing, which is you were kind enough to mention that I have a sort of past in fantasy. I am lucky that I created my social media life and my other novels in a much emptier playing field, so that I have my own fans and I have my own sort of background. It's very tough to break in right now, because there are so many voices speaking. And That doesn't mean those voices shouldn't continue to speak, but I would hate to be coming on Instagram brand new today as a fantasy author trying to get anyone to notice my book.
As I mentioned, there is a lot of material out there that is being turned into films in one or long form series in one way or another. The streaming world has certainly done well for the fantasy world. Would you like to see your work turned into something cinematic?
I wouldn't. Of course I would. The money is incredible. The fame is worthwhile. But at the same time, a very good friend of mine who's a director and sometimes a producer said the first time I got an option on one of my books, said, remember, don't write the screenplay. Don't get involved. Don't tell them about the costuming. Just take the money and walk away, because whatever happens, they will wreck your world. I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but that has been my view of watching it happen to a couple of people I know. They don't necessarily make the show you wanted or follow the ideas that you had. Often the TV show is its own thing, and we've really seen that with Game of Thrones, right? But we also see it with a number of other properties. All that being said, the sci-fi book that I brought out last year, I wrote deliberately thinking of Netflix and how they make television. And I would love Netflix to decide to pick up Artifact Space and make a 10-episode miniseries of it and the sequel, because I wrote it for that.
Against All Gods, is that a standalone or part of a series?
First book of a trilogy. Yeah, it's a three-book trilogy, and it's also set within my... I have a sort of ongoing universe, and it is basically book 9. In the ongoing universe, not that you need to have read any of the other books to understand, because Against All Gods happens on a completely separate world, but I sort of have my own universe.
And with the first book out, do you already know, or did you already know from the beginning, what all three books would contain and how they would manifest themselves? Or do you, in other words, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I'm a bit of both. I'm very willing to go with the flow of when a character takes off and does something interesting. But I've already written book 2. Book 3 is completely outlined. In fact, I'm at copy edit for book 2. I actually like to write these books in a row, bang, 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 because I also write historical fiction. So I have multiple contracts going on at a time. I really like to write my fantasy novels together, so that everything flows and the plots, especially microplots, little plots of side characters, which I love to write, have the right degree of continuity. But that being said, several times in my life, something has happened in a book where I go like, all right, toss the plot out the window. We're going with this.
I often talk to people who go from Canada to the United States or beyond, and I often ask how we lost them. You came the other way. So how did we gain you?
As a writer or as a national?
As someone living in Canada.
Well, first of all, my grandparents came from Canada during another economic depression and moved to the States. Second of all, I love Canada. I love Canada's hint of socialism. I love Canada's much more inclusive society. And I've always been very comfortable here. My dad loved to come up here camping. We used to go to Tobermory. And at some point, I fell in love with a Canadian.
That's always the way, isn't it?
Well, it's definitely a way. But when you're from upstate New York, and I'm from Rochester, it's not that much of a change across the border. We spell defense with a C even in upstate New York.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, it's fascinating to talk to you and to discuss your book, Against All Gods. Again, the first of a trilogy. Do you know the titles of the other two already?
Yeah, the second one is called Storming Heaven, and the third one is going to be called Breaking Hell.
And do you have a release date for those already in the future?
Storming Heaven should be, I believe, June 23rd of 2023. And I don't think that Breaking Hell has a release date yet.
And in the meantime, they can read the first one, Against All Gods. And as you mentioned, even though this trilogy is a standalone, you have an entirely complete world from which this book comes from. So as you said, this is what, the 9th?
Yeah, it is. It's the 9th.
9th. So Against All Gods, and people can go back and read the others as if they want to as well.
Traitor Son and Masters and Mages. They'll enjoy them all, I hope.
Excellent. Miles, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Miles Cameron, author of the fantasy novel Against All Gods. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the program number for this show, which is show number 0686, and you'll find links to Miles' site and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many of fine radio stations, including CKLU FM in Sudbury. And now, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
It was just a few weeks ago on show number 0683 that we had a similar story to this one as the Idiot of the Day. So forgive me if this sounds like deja vu, but this is a totally new incident. A New Jersey fugitive from justice made herself easy to find. She applied for a job at the Hudson County Sheriff's Office, the very law enforcement agency that specializes in picking people wanted for outstanding warrants. 27-year-old Ziama Y. Johnson was charged with being a fugitive from justice. She was wanted by authorities in Monroe County, Pennsylvania, for failure to appear in court on charges of fraud and an additional 10 bench warrants for failure to appear in court on traffic charges in Jersey City. She had applied for employment as a security guard with the sheriff's office. After confirming the validity of the warrants, she was taken into custody. And during the routine inventory of Johnson's property following her arrest, sheriff's officers discovered that she was in possession of 2 credit cards believed to be stolen, and she was subsequently charged with credit card theft. The United States Postal Investigative Service has also launched an investigation since Johnson previously worked for the Postal Service. Now, why, oh why, if the state is looking for you, would you walk into the office of the Justice Branch that is actively hunting you down to look for a job, all the while carrying stolen credit cards? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0686. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0686. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including KDXRadio.com, TrueTalkRadio.com, over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, WLSLLPFM in Dade City, Florida, Free 99 in Tyler, Texas, CKUWFM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, Local 107.3 FM in St. John, CHSR in Fredericton, and also streaming on just about any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.